In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives. Amen. Today's gospel text is in some ways an argument over how to spend or how to use a bottle of very expensive perfume. It's a pound of nard. And nard was basically an essential oil that was made out of Himalayan mountain flowers. It smelled like Himalayan mountain flowers. And apparently it drove the ancient world wild with desire because it was kind of the highest, most expensive kind of scent that you could have in the ancient world. It was highly valued. A pint of it, which is what the pound is in today's story, a pint of it in an alabaster jar would cost you 300 denarii, which is basically a year's wages. Right? And so I don't know what you think a year's wages is, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, let's say $60,000. This is a bottle of perfume worth $60,000, right? The story happens with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. And we have just before this, the chapter before this, Jesus, we're picking up where we left off with Mary, Martha, and Lazarus. They're friends of Jesus. They live in Bethany, which is outside of Jerusalem. And in the chapter before, in chapter 11, Lazarus fell ill and he was deathly sick. And Mary and Martha called out. They sent word to Jesus wherever he was at to say, hey, come, see our brother. He is ill. And Jesus tarried. Like, he didn't rush. He actually wasted some time before he went there. And so then he dies while Jesus is gone. And as he goes to Bethany, and as he's approaching on the house, you know, Martha meets him and she says, Lord, if you had been here, he would not have died. Why were you so slow to come? And then he says, well, I am the resurrection and the life. He will live. He gets closer to the house. Mary's there and he meets her and she says to him, Lord, if you had been here, he wouldn't have died. And Jesus followed her to where he was, and he saw the people mourning. And the verse says, Jesus wept. It's the shortest verses in the Bible, but the verb there is, it's this gut-wrenching, visceral, just sobbing and convulsing. Jesus wept at the death of his friend. And then Jesus says, remove the stone. And the people are like, Lord, he's been there for 4 days. There will be a stench. Right? Meaning it will smell of death. The smell of death will permeate. If you roll that stone away, the smell of death will fill our lives. Don't roll away that stone. And Jesus says, roll away the stone. And so they roll away the stone, and he says, Lazarus, come out, and Lazarus comes out of the grave. That's where the story left off, right? And now we're picking up again. And Jesus has come to visit Bethany and see his friends and see this family, and he's having a dinner with Lazarus, and they're reclined on couches and table, and Lazarus is leaning up against Jesus, right in their friendship. And as they did back in the day, they're reclining on these couches and, you know, and Mary walks into the room with this $60,000 bottle of perfume, this essential oil. And she uncorks it. And she begins to drop it on Jesus' feet, pour it out on Jesus' feet. And the smell of Himalaya flowers fills the room. This amazing scent, right, that drove the ancient world crazy. And people are breathing it in, and she is at Jesus' feet, and she's wiping Jesus' feet with her hair. She could have used a towel, but now she is covering him with the smell of Himalayan mountain flowers, and she's covering herself with the smell of Himalayan mountain flowers. It's the smell of life. And Judas doesn't like what he's seeing. Jesus turns and says, well, that jar was worth 300 denarii. That jar was worth a year's wage of $60,000. Couldn't it have been spent on the poor? What a waste. And John parenthetically said, well, Judas didn't really care about the poor. He was a thief. But Jesus responds to him. He says, let her alone. She bought this so that she could anoint me for my burial. The poor you will always have with you. And that's where the text ends. Jesus is basically saying, I am on the road to death. I'm on the road to dying, and she has anointed me with the smell of life. But Judas had a point. $60,000 is a lot of money. You can do a lot to help poor people with $60,000, right? And this feels like a very extravagant waste of a resource. Pour this perfume out on Jesus' feet. In one shot, that's a year's wages. He smells good, she smells good, the room smells good. But what has that done for anything? How has that helped the world? And Jesus says, well, the poor you will always have with you. Meaning, don't disregard the poor, meaning, you know, don't worry about the poor. But he's like, no, actually, maybe she's showing you the way. She's showing you the way that you should be in this world. This extravagant generosity that is committed to the smell of life in the face of the smell of death. Like, maybe this is a way of being. And, you know, it's curious that she washes Jesus' feet with this very expensive ointment. And then two chapters later at the Last Supper, Jesus will kneel. He'll take off his clothes and he'll kneel like a servant and wash his disciples' feet as a way of showing, as a way of demonstrating what it means to honor one another, what it means to honor the beauty and the glory of God within each of us. And that's what she's done. She's taken the smell of life, this expensive, extravagant smell of life. And it's almost a refutation of death and the power of life in the face of death. We have a clip, one of the quotes there from Jean Vanier. If I remember it correctly, it's to live... Would somebody read it? What does that quote say? To live with Jesus is to live with the poor. To live with the poor is to live with Jesus. By Jean Vanier, Canadian philosopher, theologian, right, who was living in France in the 1960s as a monk, a Catholic monk. And he noticed that at that time, developmentally disabled persons were institutionalized, right, in these awful places. They were taken from their families, they were taken from community, they were taken from society and placed in these institutions that were inhuman, that didn't recognize the dignity of the people involved. And so he and another monk took two men out of this institution and created a home where they would live together. And he felt this was his calling. And what he discovered was he meant that he grew. He was drawn deeper into, I mean, as spiritually he grew, he discovered stuff that rather than, we're the okay folks helping the disabled folks, he realized actually in terms of meeting them as equals and living in community with each other, he was transformed in the process. And so he started what became the L'Arche communities, these communities of people where people committed to living in together with developmentally disabled folks because of the transformation that happened as a result. And he's discovered Jesus, right? That's where he says to live with the poor is to live with Jesus. And maybe that's the invitation. This isn't, Jesus is saying, hey, the poor you will always have with you, isn't saying, well, do this and then take care of the poor. But maybe it's a question of how do we deal with the poor? Like, we can throw money at them. We can set up institutions and programs. And believe me, I think we need money to help institutions and programs. I mean, that's a very helpful thing. It's worth putting our financial resources to help with the poor. But Mary shows this more extravagant. Mary shows us this way of love, this way of compassion, this extravagance that she does with Jesus. As many of you know, we've just hosted the MAP program here. And some of you don't. For the month of March, here in the Tri-Cities, various churches, there's an organization called Hope for Freedom that's working with the BC housing and the city governments in providing a cold weather shelter for the homeless because our local shelter is full and can't accommodate them. And so they asked different churches to host for a month and, you know, provide people in the evening who are going to prepare a dinner and help these guys get settled in. And then there's a wake overnight staff. And then other volunteers come in the morning and prepare breakfast and lunch for the day and send them out. And a church offers to use its facility. And so for the month of March, we opened our doors to be a home for the homeless poor. That's what we did, right? And some of us served in evening shifts, and some of us served in morning shifts, and some of us made lunches, and some of us made dinners. And in doing so, we brought the smell of life into a place where there was just the smell of death. I want to give us an opportunity to kind of reflect on that as a community, because I think it was a profound experience for us. It got us in relationship with people from all other kinds of churches within this community. It got all kinds of people coming into our church. I served the last shift on Sunday night, and the LDS folks were here in our church, you know, asking about St. Lawrence and who is St. Lawrence and what kind of church are you. We got to know each other better in the process. And I know not everybody could participate. People live too far away, it's too late or it's too early, you got working lives, right? There's things that people do. So we all serve in our unique ways in all various aspects of our lives. But a lot of us did participate. And I want to create some space here and now for those of you who did participate to talk about that experience so that the rest of us get a chance to hear it. So the rest of us can hear, oh, this is what happened and this is how I was impacted. Yeah. Why don't you stand up?
So I
and let's speak up. Thank you. You were given grace, yeah. How about other folks? Wally's going to be handy and get a mic out. That's great. Love it. Technology in action.
Hi, good morning. There was a couple of Catholics that were with us on the Saturday night when Anna and I were here, and they were blown away by the building. And the beauty of the building, the size of it as well. And so I gave them a tour. And I brought them into here, turned a couple of lights on, and suggested that they may want to sit here for a few minutes because it's a very quiet and restful place, this spot here. And then I left. And they were here about 15, 20 minutes, just reflecting, and then come back and joined us. It was beautiful.
Let's hand it to Bonnie. I saw Bonnie's hand up.
Hi, morning. I volunteered, although I was suffering from a bad back, and I couldn't actually do anything except sit and chat with them. And it was amazing. I went through every single one of the men. There was no women. And just sat across with them and made sure that I just listened and asked a little bit about who they were, what's their story. And it was kind of cool because they were not feeling, some of them asked me questions and then I would share as well. It was pretty special. They were just like us.
How about others? Don't be shy. We want to hear. Here's Joy back here. Bonnie, Joy over here.
I think you're going to hear from everyone what an amazing experience it was for those of us who were had our invitation accepted. It's one thing to say, come and sleep in our house, but they place their trust in us when they share their stories, when they take a meal with us. They live through very difficult times that most of us hopefully will never know. And they are so judged by society. But that connection to people, that fact that a community member reaches out to them, looks them in the eye, asks them about their life, that is their hope back into the society that they want so badly to be a part of, that treats them so poorly. I remember somebody saying to me, I was talking to one of the staff, and they said, the connection with community is important because staff are paid to be there. And even though the staff care, you know, it's not the same as someone who has nothing to gain except their, you know, except friendship. And so the volunteers who came made a difference in these people's lives, helped them to know that there are still people who care, who want to be with them. The people that we housed, you know, they gave of their lives to us, right? They had no reason to share with us, but they chose to do that, and we keep that sacred. Among them were working people, right? People who had been teachers, people who had had, you know, tragedies in their life. They're any one of us, right? They're not the stereotypical, oh, they're a drug addict, or they just don't want to have a job. It's not like that. They're us. Anyhow, I probably said too much, but those
were
my thoughts.
Yeah.
Good morning. Patricia and I did a few shifts, evening and morning. And, you know, without question, the guests that came in were exceptionally grateful for what we had to offer. But my comment is to those that were involved. When you saw the lunches that were prepared, the amount of contributions that came in from throughout the community, not only within this parish, but the community as a whole, was overwhelming. And the meals that were prepared for dinners were absolutely fantastic meals. And the guests were very, very grateful. When we saw the meals come in, Patricia and I both said, well, we're not having dinner tonight. We're going to eat here. Because it was really, really over the top. And just a shout out to our parishioners and to those within our community that really made this work within our parish.
Hey, Sandy, up here. Oh, and Connie. Why don't Connie and then?
I think
I'm okay. Well, it helps us to get it on the website, actually. We'll do you and then Connie.
The ancient Mayans had this expression, in la cash a la ken. I am another you. Pardon me. I am another you. You are another me. So I only made dinner one night, but that was me coming through the door. And I'm always taken with the fact that one of the secrets of Jesus' ministry were exceptional dinner parties. I mean, we heard about one tonight, today, and we were just participating in that act of eating together. If we look at the earliest artistic renditions of Christian life, it's the Good Shepherd and eating together. And I really appreciated being able to feed people and maintain a distance because it's their dignity that I want to honor. Thanks very much.
I just was volunteering for one evening, and I agree with how you felt. You really feel like you wish actually you could give more, but just one more. the other side of it, I feel that, you know, some of the worries that we had at the beginning, oh, what will happen to our building? Will they come in and try and steal something? You know, I would come in because I had only volunteered the one day, but I was into the church, and you'd come in the day and go, you can't even tell that they're still here. Are they still here? It was just seamless. The place was spotless. There was no sign of us actually having done it. So, I mean, just as far as impact on the building or whatever. So I think that was just quite incredible.
I guess for me, maybe it was the first day I was here, I can't remember. I did a number of morning shifts. And this tall fellow came to me and said, "You're tiny." And I always react to that, and it's like, okay. And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You're like my mom. My mom died 3 years ago." And it was like, yeah, I can be there, and I can be like your mom. And I didn't touch anybody the whole time except that fellow on that morning. I said, "Do you want a hug?" And we hugged for probably a little while. And it was like, yeah. So I did a lot of things. I did a lot of not things. And that morning was astounding.
That's good. Thank you all. I mean, there are more stories, I'm sure. And we can share them. I'll tell one story for myself. I think it was the first night that I, can you put that back? The first night that I was on a shift, and somebody had prepared this amazing prime beef, or beef dinner, and mashed potatoes, and carrots, and broccoli, and there was gravy, and there was cheese sauce, and we had saucepans full of gravy and cheese sauce, and so, you know, there's a lot here. I'm going to let these guys serve themselves. Because that felt generous to me. That felt open. I didn't want to micromanage how much gravy and how much cheese sauce they got. I'm like, you've been homeless all day long. You get to choose how much gravy and how much cheese sauce you want to put on your meal, right? And so I hand it to the first guy, and I'm saying, "Do you want gravy or cheese sauce?" He's like, "Yeah." And I'm like, "Help yourself." And so he grabs the ladle, and his hand is filthy. And I'm not talking just dirty. It's like he hasn't washed his hands in a long while, right? And I was aware of my visceral reaction. I'm like, I'm aware of like, health code violation. Fraser Health is going to be on our case. Like, right? And like, it was like, I'm sure I could just imagine, you know. And I worked through that and pushed through that. And I was like, okay, maybe I should do it. I mean, do I need to be ladling it? And I'm like, no. I want to see his humanity. I want to see his dignity beneath his dirty hands, right? Behind his dirty hands. So he ladled it. He was very grateful, and he's very thankful. And he said, "Wow, this food is amazing. Thank you." You know, I handed it to the next guy. His hands are just as dirty. But they loved that meal, and they were so gracious for that meal, right? And I was touched by that gratitude. And I was touched by the fact that here these men are sleeping on the floor of our parish hall. They're sleeping on the floor. And I went home that night, and I got a big old double bed with a nice mat, or just queen-size bed with a nice mattress, and I'm like, wow. I felt very humble that evening. And my last shift was last Sunday night, and, you know, come April 1st, the MAP program is done. And there was a moment where I prayed for these guys, during dinner, and prayed for God's blessing for them as they went on their way, and I was acutely aware that they didn't know where they were going to go tomorrow. For many of them, for 6 months, there's one guy who had been there for every night for 6 months. He'd had a place to sleep. He'd had three meals a day. And come April 1st, he did not know where he was going to go. And he didn't know where he was going to get food, right? And that's just the reality of our. I mean, that's the reality, I think, what's going on. I was heard from Hope for Freedom. I think there were like 357, Carlos, you want to say something? 357 guys that went through that program over the course of 6 months, 365 individuals. It's not just all men. There were women involved as well. And I think 57 of them were now in some sort of treatment or some sort of shelter and off the streets, right? So that's a huge impact for folks. So we did a good thing. Part of what I want to say happened here, and linking it back to the gospel text, it is as if we brought the smell of Himalayan mountain flowers into the smell of death.